Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan presents The Drive with the Top 6 at 6.
How about 6? 6 is good.
Step number 1, the news about J.J. Watt. Let me just go there first. Were you surprised to hear that the Colts and maybe even another team might have had more money on the table for J.J. Watt? Or do you think it was relatively minuscule and that story is kind of being blown up?
I was surprised to hear that, because the only thing that made sense to me why J.J. Watt would sign with the Cardinals was money. I mean, outside of that, they're not contenders. He had an opportunity to go to Green Bay. He could have gone to Cleveland, could have gone to a handful of different contenders. But he chose Arizona. And I'm not saying they're a bad football team, but they're definitely not contenders. So when I heard that report, I thought, I'm not sure if this is true or not.
It's weird. I don't believe it, because I really think, Tyler, he must have gone to Arizona really for the money.
Yeah.
Aside from maybe the lifestyle as well.
Right. No, he went for the money.
I mean, maybe they can make it work, right? Maybe they can, maybe it can happen and they can be a playoff team.
Sure.
But I mean, they're not a contender like.
But you don't choose them because you feel like that's your best opportunity to win a championship.
No, that would be ridiculous.
All right.
All right, ring it, Kevin.
This one's good. This one's good just for you. I love it. I love this. We've got a coffee bet on this, by the way.
I know.
Major League Baseball insider John Heyman has reported today that per his sources, the Colorado Rockies feel that they do not have the budget to sign Trevor Story to a long-term deal.
Oh, my God.
And one is not expected to come in the near future. So, what's their excuse now, D-Mac?
There won't be one.
You said that will be your burn it down moment.
A little bit, yeah. Oh, my God. You've got to have some good players, especially up the middle at Coors Field. This will break me. It's not good right now. I understand it's not good right now. And I ended up rewatching quite a bit of the Dodgers game yesterday.
The Dodgers game?
There was a good chunk of it.
What are you talking about? What Dodgers
game? They played
game?
The Dodgers yesterday. In fact,
rewatched a Cactus League game?
Yeah.
Huh?
something weird.
Okay.
Well, it was like a cut-up. It was a cut-up, like, long edited version of it.
Okay. Good for you.
Good for me. I've got a problem. It's more like I've got a problem.
You do remember that you said that'll be your burn it down moment, though. And if they do not re-sign him, you're coming in here. World's on fire.
I don't know what choice I would have at that point. There is a cool little story, though, with the Rockies. You know, I'll give that to you. Ring it.
There you go. The PR machine's coming out.
Greg Bird, who graduated from Grandview High School and played for the Yankees and unfortunately got off track with some injuries, is now trying to make the team with the Rockies. He played at least yesterday. Guys, help me out. Did they play today? Was there? I'm not even sure.
Nobody knows. Nobody's following spring training games.
But
anyways. What was the score? We got to know.
I don't know. I don't know what they did today.
I'm not going to be able to sleep.
They were off today? They had a day off? They played two games and had a day off? Oh, okay. Anyways, Greg Bird. How cool or not cool is the story if Greg Bird can make the team? He's known as possibly the greatest high school hitter in Colorado high school baseball history. Does that move the needle for you at all in terms of something that you'd be excited to watch for the Rockies?
Oh, it's always a great story when you've got a local boy that goes good. You know, I don't know Greg Bird, so I don't feel like I'm personally invested in his story. But no doubt about it, it's easy to root for Philip Lindsay because he's a local kid, right? He went to South, he went up to CU, and right, he's right back around the corner playing for the Broncos. That always helps a little bit, sure.
I would love it. But now I feel like the Rocket PR machine a little bit if I'm bringing up these kind of
minor stories. If you're bringing that up after I'm pointing out Trevor Story, yeah.
Oh, no, I really
you are the PR
it.
Machine.
Ring it, Kevin.
Goodness gracious.
Save me.
Dak Prescott apparently is looking to sign a deal that is in the neighborhood of what Patrick Mahomes just signed for, which, by the way, was $500 million.
Right.
Okay. Dak Prescott is clearly not as good as Patrick Mahomes, nor does he have the resume, nor does he have Super Bowls or anything like that.
Yeah.
But do you think when it's all said and done, Dak Prescott will sign a deal that's in the ballpark of Patrick Mahomes?
I do not. I really don't. I think he... No.
And think about the guaranteed.
Don't
think about the $500 billion. Think about the guaranteed money.
$140 for 5 years. That's what he gets for injury. To me, that's what is the real deal. 5 years, yeah. $140 million.
Right.
And in fact, this whole like $40 million a year is not even true. Because it's like 27, 35, 42. And then like 5 or 6 years down the road, it's like $60 million.
Mm.
And I would be stunned if it got to that without being renegotiated. So I really look at the Mahomes deal as 5 years, $140 million, which is still great. Anyways, no, I don't see that with Dak Prescott. I don't even get it. And I don't think the Cowboys are all that interested in it. And you know what? I would want to see him play a little bit after coming back from this injury, Tyler. So I just think he's going to get tagged by the Cowboys, which is reasonable. And whether he plays on it or not, I guess will be up to him. And I think everybody will just wait and see. I think the situation with Dak Prescott is actually pretty similar to what the Broncos have going with Justin Simmons.
I think he'll probably end up getting tagged if that's the type of contract that he's looking for. They probably will not come to an agreement. But if they do come to an agreement, my expectation is that the guaranteed money actually will be in the ballpark. Not because he's as good, but because he's the best available quarterback, and that's what happens every single year. The best free agent just sets the market, or he comes close to it. So if he were to come to terms, I think the guaranteed money would probably fall, oh, I'm going to guess 120-ish. I guess that's not totally in the ballpark, but it's still insane.
It's breathtaking for sure. Ring Kevin. All right, a couple interesting guys got released today. Kyle Rudolph got released by the Vikings. George Payton with the Vikings. Save that for a second. And Kyle Van Noy, after signing a pretty big lucrative deal last year with the Dolphins, was let go. Now, I'm just going to guess Rudolph was getting a little bit older and maybe was cost prohibitive. The Van Noy one I actually don't understand at all. Should the Broncos be interested in either of these two guys?
Well, anytime a player becomes available from somebody else's former team, always keep your eye on it, for sure. You know, Kyle Shanahan is the king of that. He brings all his guys everywhere that he goes, and he brings them back 5 years later, the second he gets the opportunity to do it.
Mm-hmm.
So if George Payton were to be interested in Kyle Rudolph, I wouldn't be shocked, but it happens to be a room that we don't really need Kyle Rudolph in. As far as Van Noy goes, really interesting. I'm really curious what the deeper level story is there, because it's so unusual to get released 1 year into a deal like that. And he had reasonable production last year. It wasn't great, but he had six sacks. That's not nothing, you know? So, hey, if you move on from Vaughn, all those guys are going to be in the picture, but I don't think a guy like Kyle Van Noy is going to change what you're doing with Vaughn Miller.
Ring it, Kevin.
You know, our running back room looks pretty good on paper right now. You've got two guys that are borderline Pro Bowl players. Do you think that our running back room will feature these two guys next year? And if not, who do you think it will feature?
That is such a great question. I do not think it'll feature... I got a hot take on Hot Take Tuesday.
Let's go.
It'll feature neither of those two guys.
Okay. I think that's reasonable.
And you will get yourself a, I don't know, vet running back who won't be your primary guy, but it'll be sturdy, and you'll draft somebody in the third round. And that'll be your guy. And guess what? There are going to be really good running backs available in the third round. To me, the Melvin Gordon thing with the DUI is just so dicey and is such a get-out-of-jail-free card for the Broncos. The only thing that really, really, really helps Melvin Gordon is it's clear Pat Shurmur wanted Melvin Gordon.
Okay.
Ain't no doubt about it.
Yeah.
Phillip, I think like you brought up, what's the tender?
So if you were to go original round tender on Philip Lindsay, he would make 2.1. But he would also be available for any other team to sign him, and you wouldn't get anything in compensation back because he was an undrafted rookie.
I like that. It just shows that, hey, it's really literally the lowest we can pay this guy and keep him around. It's an insult. And it's to the point where if that happens, I can't imagine Philip would want to be here. However, if you're the Broncos, I don't know, you got nothing to lose. Why not roll the dice? You probably... I mean, this could be the biggest indignation for Phil Lindsay, by the way. There's a chance they could still draft a guy in the third round, and Philip could actually drop back a spot. But that being said, it's very likely that Gordon will get suspended for the first three games of the season, too. So you've got to have some sort of plan. So you may have a weird situation where in game four of the season, Philip Lindsay is your third string running back.
All right, so here's what I would do. I would put a second-round tender on Philip Lindsay. I would pay him 3.25, and I would use my get-out-of-jail-free card on Melvin Gordon, and I would cut him.
And then
I would draft somebody in the third round. Now, here's what I think is going to happen. I think they will put an original round tender on Philip Lindsay. I think another team will scoop him up in a heartbeat because they don't have to give any draft picks back. And I think they will stay committed to Melvin Gordon, and we will still be drafting somebody third or fourth round.
That seems to make a lot of logical sense to me. And I do feel like Cecil and Nick had Philip on, which was a terrific interview. And I get Philip's frustrations. Like, I'll run between the tackles if you want me to, but I can do other things if you give me the chance, and it probably puts me in a better situation. And literally, the Broncos would not do that. I don't know why. It seems pretty obvious. They obviously, for whatever reason, don't respect his pass-catching skills, which, again, I really don't get, Tyler. I don't understand. But we just have to read. You know, the best thing for Philip, in all honesty, is just to go somewhere else and just get a fresh start somewhere and you know, make the Broncos regret a bad decision. It really probably is the best thing. But don't sleep on it. Gordon's here because of Shermer. There's no doubt about it. Bring in Kevin. And they're still in charge for now.
But it's not George Payton's contract.
It's not. No, Payton's got to look at a lot of this stuff and be like, why do we do this?
All right.
I feel for George Payton a little bit. I get why he's getting up at 4:50 a.m. to try to, you know, straighten stuff out.
We don't have too many bad contracts, though. We've got Juwan James. Got Melvin Gordon. What other bad contracts do you have?
Well, that's a good thing. Let's think about it a little bit. But I do not want to keep our next guest holding on too long. Nuggets had a nice win last night, which was cool. And we have Coach George Karl on the Johnson Auto Plaza hotline. Hey, Coach! Thanks for being on. You wrote a piece for DenverFan.com talking about Carmelo's time in Denver and the trade that went down. I'm just curious, as you were writing that piece, what were some of the things that were going through your mind?
Oh, man, it's a lot of good and a lot of sadness. I think the best thing is, you know, he's one of the most talented players I've ever coached, and he's a great offensive player, great talent in that area. And then, you know, you get back, and as all coaches do, you know, they want to get the most out of their players. And in a lot of ways, I didn't think I got the most out of Melo. I think Melo could have been a better defender, could have been a better unselfish kind of triple-double machine guy that today's game is showing is that's the type of guy you need to win a championship. You need triple-double guys. You don't need 50 points. You need guys that can do everything and also have a balance, at least a strong mind to be, you know, at least be a decent, a good defender. So there's a lot of happy and a lot of sad. And I think that's kind of came away. That's the way, if you read the article, that's the way you should come away from it. But, you know, I'm happy for Miller right now. I'm glad he's got a second life a little bit and kind of playing pretty damn good basketball.
Looking back on it, would there have been things that you would do differently the second go-around to try to get more out of him?
You know, I don't know if this is publicly known, but the year that I came down with cancer. We kind of stubbed our toe in the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
And that summer I was in recovery. And I actually talked to my coaching staff about challenging Melo, me, not the staff, but me going one-on-one more often with Melo in meetings and film studies.
Gotcha.
And trying to just say to him, this is what we need to become a champion. You know, we're you know, one step away, two steps away, whatever you want to say. I thought we were one step away from being a championship team. And that was in July, you know. And I was still in recovery. I was still wobbly a little bit. I was weak. I talked to my coaching staff how they're going to have to delegate more. They're going to have to take more responsibility and being given more I've got to delegate more responsibilities to them. And then, of course, Melo pulled the plug. And in August, I don't know, we knew about mid-August that he was going to announce he wanted to be traded.
Mm-hmm.
And so the one thing I believe in trying to win a championship, you cannot have compromise. You must be committed. And everybody's got to be committed. Whatever biases, whatever anger, whatever frustrations you have, you got to leave them at the door when you walk in the locker room. And you're committed and dedicated. And I just thought my relationship with Melo was more of a compromise, working through the problems, and not ever getting to that championship commitment that I think was needed. I know is needed to win a championship, but I failed in getting it from Melo.
Why do you think there's so many Nuggets fans to this day that harbor such strong anger against Carmelo?
Well, one, I think fans are smarter, and they are more aware of how the game of basketball is played than players think they are. And I think there are fans that know the game of basketball, and those people know when he's being selfish. Those people know when he's not running back on defense. Those people know when he's cheating the team by taking a lazy possession or yelling at the referee or doing something that is individualistic and not commitment to the team. And those fans are the ones I think are angry. I think most fans from outside of Denver probably look at Melo as a very positive, great player. But I think the people that see him, watch him every night, and watch him for, what, seven seasons every night, they see the flaws as much as they see the specialness and the greatness. And the flaws sometimes come off as individualistic. Some people call it selfish. I never thought Melo was selfish. I thought he just felt he could do it by himself better than anybody else could on the court.
We're watching Michael Porter Jr. kind of have a little bit of a turnaround here, and it's starting to feel like Denver, hey, man, do we have our own little big three? These guys are playing good basketball together. I'm just curious. We're sitting here talking about Carmelo, and Michael Porter Jr. has been a little bit of a head-scratcher. He's been frustrating to watch, and he's starting to turn it on. What kind of similarities do you see between those two players?
I think Melo is more advanced than Michael Porter Jr. in so many different areas. I mean, I think Porter Jr. is has ability and someday will be a great shooter. He has an ability to get shots because of his size and length, but he doesn't have the other aspects of the game, and that's what I think people are seeing now. He could be a great rebounder. He's a great cutter. His length, if he learns how to use his length, he could be a decent to good defender. And I think that's what you're kind of seeing, that Michael Porter Jr. is all of a sudden seeing the other aspects of the game of basketball that he can have an impact on. And instead of just being nervous if he's scoring, he's cool. But if he's not scoring, he's nervous. You can kind of see him out there be nervous a little bit. And he's getting better at that. He's getting better at satisfying his intensity. If he doesn't get the ball, he can do it by doing other things on the floor. Taking charges, getting extra possessions, making the extra pass, being a teammate, being a mentally focused body language guy. The one thing about Michael Porter Jr., he has what I call cool body language. Cool doesn't win anything in the NBA. It might win the fans over a little bit, but cool doesn't win NBA championships, and it doesn't win NBA games.
Coach George Karl joining us. Okay, break down the end of the Wizards game, where you could argue it was a 4-on-1, There's time on the clock. There's not a timeout called, and what happened happened. How did you look at that play?
I would have been confused. I didn't know. I wouldn't know who to argue to, who to yell at, because I could yell at all of them. I mean, Murray makes kind of a weird kind of change of direction, and I think if he just would have taken it to the rim, everything else would have maybe fell in place. But then I look at it on tape a couple times more.
Yeah.
And I'm going, why is Michael Porter Jr. going there when he's got dunk at the rim? And you can say the same thing for Fosu and Morris, who's your trail. Why do they stop at the line? You know, we need to tie the game. We don't need to win the game. Let's tie the game. And, you know, a 99% percentage shot is a hell of a lot better than a 37%.
So you would, as a coach, just prefer to just take it to overtime and take your chances rather than going for the win right there?
No question. There's not a coach in the world that wants you to take that three unless you're just, you know, an underdog. And, we always said in our coaching philosophy is, if the game tells you to go to the rim, you have to go to the rim.
Okay.
You have to go to the rim. If the game tells you to go to the rim, go to the rim and good things will happen.
So what happened then was bizarre because
nobody went to the rim.
Because nobody, and they would have been coached to go to the rim in that situation every single time for their entire playing lives, right?
Exactly. But I thought it was like a statement of where our game is going. The three-point line has influenced our game, maybe in a negative way. That we gotta have some sense.
Yeah.
To how we play the game, and I'm a believer. And there are coaches now are allowing escape threes, step back threes, spin dribble threes, and I just think the three ball. You got to like the three ball, and you got to be able to shoot the three ball, defend it, and rebound it. But you cannot deteriorate your shot selection by taking too many of them and taking bad ones.
Mm. Well, we always love catching up with you. I am so heartbroken for you that your Tar Heels lost to my Orange last night. I don't even know how you're...
Don't even start.
I don't know how you're getting over that today. But, ACC man. Basketball. Sorry, Coach. Hey,
Tar Heel basketball is up and down, up and down. I've gone 2 years of up and down, but I've had like 30 years of... Yeah!
Well, Coach, I went to Syracuse. We've had our ups and downs, too. It's, we're in good company. More ups for you guys, though. But,
yeah.
But anyways, thank you, Coach. We love having you on, and we'll talk to you next week.
Okay, guys, enjoy. Celebrate.
There's George Karl on the Johnson Auto Plaza hotline. Okay, Tyler, I got a really quirky thing that happened from a random listener because I just give out my cell phone. It gets interesting things. I'll share that with you next.
Does your company make safety a top priority? Alliance Safety, Colorado's premier supplier of safety equipment, is here to help make it one. As an authorized distributor of 3M safety products and home to all pro gear, Alliance has a vast inventory of personal protective equipment designed to keep your workers safe, including fall protection, safety glasses, protective gloves, and gas detection solutions. Visit AllianceSafetyInc.net. Call 303-388-8766 or stop by the Alliance Safety Warehouse off I-70 and Tower today to lock up all your safety needs.
Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan presents The Drive. Here's Tyler Palumbis and D-Mac.
I was dealing with something very quirky earlier today, Tyler. So I give my number out, 719-229-8152. And some listeners who reach out to me, I actually know who they are. Or we've gone back and forth to the degree where I'll save their name. But most, I don't. I just don't.
Okay.
And they don't bug me. They just reach out every now and then. It's all good. I wouldn't give out my number if that wasn't the case. One listener today was engaging me, which was great. I'm glad he did, with just such a fascinating concept. He had run three different mock draft scenarios. There's a great website, mockdraftsimulator.com, and you can peg in you know, what you would do and see how the rest would, you know, fall out based on the picks that you would make. It kind of does it for you, or it simulates different things if you move up, if you stay where you are, if you move back, blah, 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 blah. It's really neat. It's fun to do. And he sent me three different mock draft simulations. One of them, they moved up. One of them, they stayed the same. One of them, they moved back. And the one they moved up, they took Zach Wilson. And
in what spot?
At number three.
Ooh.
Three.
I don't think you're going to get him there, but okay.
And I think when they stayed put, they took Micah Parsons, and I kind of forget who they took when they moved back. But
probably my exact plan. I move up for Zach Wilson. I took Micah Parsons at number 9, and I took Caleb Farley or a corner at number 15.
There you go. See, you and
simpatico.
There you go. And he asked me, what did I like best? And I go, well, I like the Zach Wilson thing the best because – inherently, if you're doing that, you have moved on from Drew Locke, and that fulfills the, you know, the thing that, you know, I've advocated for years. And the conversation that we had, because he didn't like that the best. He liked the moving back the best. And his logic was, why would we move up to take a quarterback for coaches who are not going to be here? And I just laughed at that. Because there is a thought out there, and I think you share it, that it's actually inevitable that Vic Fangio and Pat Shurmur are going to be fired after this year.
Yeah, I wouldn't say inevitable, but it's definitely a high possibility. And, you know, I would not concern yourself at all with that, though. How many times are you going to have the opportunity to draft a quarterback? That's what you got to ask yourself. And if you're in firing position to go get a Zach Wilson, who cares who his offensive coordinator is this year? Seriously, who cares? George Payton is not here for Vic Fangio or Pat Shurmur.
That's the part that cracks me up.
You know who George Payton will be here for?
Who?
Whatever quarterback he selects, that's who he's going to be here for. And in the long run, that's who he's going to design an entire building around. So, you know, if you've got the opportunity to take a quarterback that you like, you do it, and you don't concern yourself with whatever the future is for your coaching staff.
Well, let me back up a little bit then. To what degree are you certain that if George Payton had to hire an offensive coordinator and a head coach today, to what degree are you certain it would not be Vic Fangio and Pat Shurmur?
Oh, I'm not certain of that. I don't know.
To what degree?
Well, hold on. Like, are we making an assumption that they weren't here and we haven't seen what they've seen? Because you're saying he would hire them?
He would hire them. They would be his choice. Pat Shurmur and Vic Fangio.
Knowing what we know, the percentage would be very low. I mean, and we do know what we know, so I guess I'll answer it that way. Based off the first few years of this regime, I highly doubt that George Payton would go out of his way to hire this specific staff.
So, by logic, if we're really going to go after a quarterback and not really care about Vic Fangio and Pat Shurmur, and we don't think it's all that likely he would ever retain or hire in the first place Vic Fangio and Pat Shurmur, what are we doing?
Well, hold on.
Why don't we just get rid of Vic Fangio and Pat Shurmur now?
Well, you're bypassing a very realistic possibility, and the realistic possibility is what if the Broncos make the playoffs? You're not going to fire them. You're not going to fire Vic Fangio, nor are you going to fire Pat Shurmur.
Right.
So you've got a redshirt year. You've got a freebie. So,
it's just weird to me, though. That's all.
Well, I mean, it's not... I guess I understand why it's weird, but I don't understand what's like why we're hung up on it a little bit because... It is what it is. And at the end of the year, if they have success, they'll still be the coaches. And if they don't have success, well, George Payton's got absolutely no ties to him, and he'll move on from him in a heartbeat.
All right. So then the answer to my first question, because I said, you know, that they move on from him, is actually it's not 100% that he would not hire them. It's more like 60-70%, meaning that there's a chance he would hire them based on something else. So my point is, it's not 100% that they're out next year no matter what. There is a possibility.
No, definitely not. Easily there's a possibility.
Okay, then if there's a possibility, then why wouldn't you give them the tools that fit them the best for them to succeed? Meaning, don't go after a quarterback for the next guy. go after a quarterback that suits them the best.
Because there's a greater possibility that they won't be here. So, I mean, play the odds. And don't draft for anybody that's here on a one-year rental. And that's every coach in this building. They're all here on a one-year rental right now. And if they perform well, then guess what? You gave them a tool. You gave them a quarterback that they're having success with anyways. So, fantastic. And if they don't, which is, you know, a very realistic possibility, you cannot be drafting for guys that you think are, it might only be here for 1 year.
I'm just laughing because if you go up and get Zach Wilson, you are literally telling a very young person, we have more confidence in you than the coaching staff, your bosses, the adults, the much older adults.
Like, well, there's nothing to say that Zach Wilson couldn't succeed in a Pat Shurmur offense.
Okay. All right, fine. But at the end of the day, you're really telling them it's more about you, and whether this works out or not, you're still going to be around. You're our future, and we'll just move on from these guys. It's just an odd.
I mean, you're not really telling him that at all. This is how football works, D-Mac. I mean, if you have success, you have a job. If you don't have success, you get fired.
Do you think Drew Locke thought he had better job security than Vic Fangio when he came in here?
No.
I don't either. But
Drew Locke didn't come in under these circumstances.
I just find it weird that we would make any other plan except for what would work best with Vic Fangio and Pat Shurmur, you know, sort of.
All right, well, hey,
forward.
Man, if you want a plan for Vic Fangio and Pat Shurmur, you're more than welcome to. I'm not going to do that.
I guess I am because my guy. Because I'm thinking of the situation with those guys in mind.
Okay. I think that's probably a big mistake.
You definitely could be right.
Do you think that it's more likely that Vic Fangio and Pat Shurmur will be the coach next year, or more unlikely that they will be?
That is an awesome question.
And it's not that hard. Just answer that, and then that tells you how to draft.
Oh, my gosh. I think it depends on the quarterback. I think it depends on the quarterback. I think if you can find a quarterback that can manage things in a way that's acceptable for them, the odds are much higher that they'll be back. And so that's why my guy is Mac Jones, because I think he's just
okay,
a more...
Okay, so you think we're going to the playoffs next year then?
I think there's going to be a 17-game schedule, and I think the Broncos... I don't know. That's two different questions.
No,
I'm
it's not.
Sure.
No, it's not. Because if we go to the playoffs, these guys will have their jobs. If we don't go to the playoffs, they're probably getting fired.
What if they're 9-8?
That's going to be a tough call. Because
that's what I think is more likely.
And you might retain them in that situation.
Right. Listen, man, if they're 6-11, you know, even if they're 7-10, I think they're out the door. But what if they are that very quirky 8-9, 17-game schedule or 9-8? What are you doing now? I mean, you've actually won quite a few games no matter what you're doing, and things are looking better, much better, but you might not make the playoffs. It's
right.
That weird linger area. So, and I don't know how much they believe in Drew Locke, and I just laugh that you just, you know, forget about these guys. Let's just get our guy, and we'll find the coaches that fit him, it's not a bad strategy. Like Cliff Kingsbury and Kyler Murray, they went together. Like
sure.
that was a plan. And because of the wacky way the Broncos are doing things, I mean, George Payton is having to catch up on a lot of stuff that he probably wouldn't do anyway.
Right, right.
And it's the answer is probably zero that George Payton would hire Vic Fangio as his head coach. I'm not sure about Pat Shurmur as coordinator because he does know Pat Shurmur. He actually has a relationship with Pat Shurmur. So maybe he would hire Pat Shurmur. But I mean, seriously, let's be real here. The odds that George Payton, out of all the possible head coaching candidates in the world, he hires Vic Fangio.
Knowing what we know today, probably pretty low.
Zero. All right, that being said, let's catch up with the latest of the news of the day with Troy Rank coming up next.
You're listening to The Drive on Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan. Here's Tyler Palumbus and D-Mac.
Our guy Troy Rank is brought to you by
ROX Rocks Heating and Air.
He is our Denver 7 Broncos insider. We spoke with him earlier. Let's just start with Justin Simmons. Let's start there and we'll go from there. Justin Simmons, are you hearing anything?
Well, there's motivation to keep Justin Simmons, and it's different than last year because George Payton espouses a model of draft and development. And even though he didn't draft and develop Justin Simmons, that's what it looks like. You get a guy, he's homegrown, he does everything, checks every box on and off the field, and they will find a way to keep him, is my belief. Now, I don't think they'll get a deal done before March 9th, because, you know, Simmons might wait to see if Adams signs. He might wait, but they're close enough between the franchise tag and what the top salary would be that there's a feeling something will get done. D-Mac, it might take until July 15th. If you look at Todd France's history as an agent, he doesn't have a sense of urgency to anything. He's not going to blink, and they're going to try to get it to the end. So I would be surprised if something got done before the tag has to be declared by the 9th. But I do believe this summer, as we sit here today, something will get done.
So in your mind, the tag is sort of irrelevant in the big picture. It's not an indication of whether they want to come to a long-term deal or not.
I agree. And you've said this before, Tyler, and I agree with you. If you're going to keep Simmons, you're better off to keep him on a long-term deal. Because once you tag him, you have no elasticity with the salary. And it creates some acrimony, whether they say it or not. Privately, it makes the player feel like, I'm not going to be here after this year because they're not going to tag him a third time. And it just feels like 2 years in a row, we couldn't get anything done. I'm playing the string out. And I'm just telling you, that's what players, that fills their heads. Whether it does with Justin, I can't speak for him, but I know in general, it affects the relationship between the team and the player. And in the case of Simmons, he's their guy. So I just think it's going to get done. It's just going to require patience, and it might go down to July 15th. They're close enough on the money to get a long-term deal done. And you can make his base salary then $5 million this year like they did with Garrett Bowles on his long-term deal.
All right, Von Miller, what are you hearing, if anything?
Yeah, Von's situation, I still think it's 50-50. I know some are painting it more optimistically, but, you know, the J.J. Watt deal shows you to at least some degree what the market would be for Von. I mean, they both turned 32 this month. Their production is wildly similar. I mean, Watt's got a couple defensive player of the year things, but Von has Super Bowl 50 MVP. I mean, their career total sacks production, very similar. Watt's had more injuries, but Von's coming off an injury. So 2 year, 31, 23 guaranteed for Watt. Joby Brannion, Miller's agent, will make sure Von knows this is kind of the market. If you want to leave and they ask you to take a pay cut, you could go somewhere else, whether it's Cleveland, Green Bay, pick a team, there'll be a market for Von Miller. The part I don't know, D-Mac, is how much does Von want to finish his career here? I do think there's going to be resolution with the off-field issue with the Parker police, and I think that's going to be resolved here in the next week or two before the March 16th deadline. So that might provide some clarity. But I think it's 50-50 because every dollar counts, and Von's on the wrong side of 30, and he wasn't himself in 19. So I can't sit here and say he will be back. I think it's a chance, but they may say take a pay cut. And he's like, you know what? I'm good. I'm going to go be a free agent. I want to see what that's like. And I could see that happening just as clearly as well.
So you do think that there'll be resolution. To me, that feels awfully quick as long as this investigation has been taking. I'm actually surprised to hear you say that you think that it'll be resolved by between now and when they have to give him the bonus.
Well, it took time with Parker Police. Now it's in the hands of the DA. That's different. And I just think, based on my sources and people I talked to in the last couple of days, the sense is there could be resolution in the next couple of weeks. And that could help Von. Obviously, if he's cleared and there's no charges, mm-hmm. that helps Von. Because, you know, if you get involved in a domestic situation in the NFL, that's a 6-game suspension.
Right.
I mean, you're talking about almost half of your season. So I think that would help Von. But that's not necessarily hinging on him returning. I just think, for his sake, having that removed would be hugely beneficial, whether he's to stay with the Broncos or become a free agent.
All right, Troy, anything else we should be aware of? Anything else we should know?
You know, I'm finishing up a story on Calvin Anderson, who started one game at right tackle, one at left tackle.
Number 76.
And he can solve the Rubik's Cube behind his back. This guy was a mathematics, economic analysis major at Rice.
Wait a second.
Was that a literal statement?
How can he solve a Rubik's Cube without looking at it?
He's brilliant. He's been solving them since he was 13. He's sponsored by Rubik's Cube.
What?
But he does it before games still to calm his nerves and to form his critical thinking and identifying his assignments as an offensive lineman.
I was really not a smart offensive lineman.
That's what I should have told him. Is like, wait, you're smart. I've been around Schlereth and Palumbus.
Hell? No,
so
fair.
Oh my God.
He's so smart. I said to him, what in the hell are you doing playing football?
Oh, by the way, Troy, as a proud CU grad, how fired up are you that you are breaking the streak since 1994 with playing CSU to replace them with UNC on September 3rd.
It's cool to see. I mean, I'm anxious to see how, eager to see how the Eddie Mack experiment goes at UNC. His son will be starting, so I'm eager to see that. Hey, quick tidbit. Do you know who else is at UNC along with Dylan McCaffrey, a quarterback?
Is Max McCaffrey?
No, he's going to Louisville.
No, that's Dylan.
Luke. I'm sorry. Luke is going. Max is Andrew, coach there.
Right.
Andrew Brister, Bubby's son, is a quarterback.
No way! I didn't know that.
That's why you guys call me.
Troy, what is a better story? CU playing CSU or CU playing UNC in light of Ed McCaffrey and Dylan McCaffrey? What's a better story?
For the state, it'd be CSU. For those of us who know the Broncos, it's Eddie Mack's cool, but there's just no history there.
Eddie Mack's blinded.
It's CSU. I mean, because the state cares. The state won't embrace CU-UNC. They just won't. They embrace CU-CSU.
All right. I think you're wrong with all
you're
due
so
respect.
Blinded. But we so love blinded.
Thank you, Troy.
Yep.
Troy Rank, our Denver 7 Broncos insider.
Brought to you by ROX Rocks Heating and Air.
Where are we going to sit for that CU-UNC battle? Where are we going to be for those
I
moments?
I love it. I'm not hanging out with you if you're wearing the wrong colors.
What other colors would I be wearing?
Somebody says we're sitting together. We're not sitting together if you're not wearing the right colors.
How many coffees are we putting on this one?
A lifetime.
A lifetime?
Infinite. Forever.
Right. Well, that ruins my second question. How many points are you giving me? But, hey, that's fun. It's a, you know, it's great always seeing in-state schools go against each other. A little bit of a twist. It's been a while.
It'll be fun, for sure.
Yeah, no doubt.
Seeing Dylan McCaffrey back on a big stage right away, playing in another D1 school. Okay, it'll be fun.
And when that game happens up in Greeley, I think it'll be awesome to host you up there. I'll show you where all the hot spots are.
Yeah, cool.
I'll take you to Chiba Hut. I know we're two locations
on. Now there's Chiba Hut Boulder as well.
All right. Yeah. Nick and Cecil are coming up next.